Go ahead and turn to Matthew chapter 5 as we continue in our series where Jesus is looking at the great sermon that we call the Sermon on the Mount. And today we're going to be looking at verses 31 and 32 in which Jesus is teaching on the subject of divorce. I want to give two little side notes here. First of all, this was a really bad week, but I somehow lost my wedding ring on the day that I'm preaching on divorce. So I'm still married. I'm still madly in love with my wife. We're not going anywhere, but my ring did go somewhere. So I'm sure it'll turn up at some point. But this morning I was like, I can't find my ring. It's a bad week to do this. Also, as I was preparing this message, I want to tell you, like last week we came off, we tackled a heavy subject, but hopefully we did it in a light manner that we see engaged people. Today is going to be a little bit heavier on the topic of divorce. I don't have any whipped cream today, like nothing exciting like that, but we're going to be talking about some important subjects, but it is going to be just a little bit more in depth just because of there's so much to this issue that I want to go over. Now, if you asked me about the top 10 subjects or passages that I would like to preach on, today's sermon would not be on that list. If you asked me about the top 100 topics or passages that I would like to preach on, today's subject would not be on that list. In fact, if you asked me the top 1,000 subjects or passages that I would like to preach on, today's sermon would not be on that list. Are you noticing a theme here? This is not particularly something that I enjoy preaching about, that I want to preach about, and certainly not something that I was just looking forward to as I saw the passage come up weeks ago or months ago. I never went yippee like that, because divorce is just a highly emotional subject. And there's a lot of opinions about it, both from people and from theologically from the church. And so no matter what I say today, I have no doubt that someone is going to leave upset. And so I'm just admitting that right now. And I'm going to do my best to try to keep my opinion out of this and stick to what I believe the Bible is saying on the subject. But this is one of the reasons why we spend the bulk of our Sundays each year teaching through books of the Bible or parts of books of the Bible. Because when you go through a couple of chapters, verse by verse, you're going to be forced to preach on things that you don't necessarily want to, that don't fall into your top 1,000 list or 100,000 list. And so while divorce may not fall on my top list, we're going to look at it anyways because it is in the Word of God. And actually, as we're going to see, it's in the Word of God quite a bit. But it's a good thing we do look at this subject, because divorce is something that has likely impacted all of us here today in some way. All of us have friends or family or coworkers who have gone through it. Some of us here in this room have gone through it. Just last week, one of my good friends, posted online on Facebook that he was single. And I looked at that and I said to myself, I know he was not single before because I was at his wedding. So something had changed since the last time that I talked to him, which had been quite a while. And I came across one Memphis divorce lawyer's website where he posted some recent statistics about divorce. And so I want to share some of those just so you can see the prevalence of this. And this won't come as any surprise to any of you. But first of all, he said that in 2021, the divorce rate was 42%. And he gave some statistics that 20% of marriages end within the first 5 years. 32% end within the first 10 years of marriage. He said that 48% of spouses who married before the age of 18 are likely to divorce within 10 years. And so the times of marriage, he said, that are most at risk of being divorced. So first of all, between years 1 and 2 of marriage, and then between years 5 and 8. And so all this to say that divorce is prevalent in our country. And so with that in mind, it would be helpful to know what Jesus said on the topic of divorce. And so let me go ahead. I'm going to read our whole passage first, just 2 verses. And this is in Matthew chapter 5, verse 31. Jesus says, It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So in this passage, Jesus is talking about divorce, but he's actually quoting from Deuteronomy chapter 24. And so for context's sake, I thought it would be important that I read what Moses said back in Deuteronomy. And so let me read that passage. It's 4 verses. So Moses says that when a man takes a wife and marries her, if then she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, and she departs out of his house, and if she goes and becomes another man's wife, and the latter man hates her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or the latter man dies who took her to be his wife, then her former husband who sent her away may not take her again to be his wife. We'll stop there. So even though this sounds from our modern day context like it's preaching, or like Moses is speaking down on women, the command is actually to protect women in this passage. So in that time, women could not divorce. And so Moses gives a situation here in which women were being taken advantage of. Here's the situation. So husband one divorces his wife and sends her out. The wife now remarries a new husband. We'll call him husband number two. And husband number two either dies or divorces her. In this situation, it doesn't matter. And so Moses is saying here in Deuteronomy 24, that the husband one isn't allowed to reclaim his wife, his first wife there, at that point. He can't make her come back to him. Now, fast forward over the next 1,400 years, and there developed 2 different interpretations of this passage. Not as much about the scenario here, but what Jesus or what Moses said at the beginning. And so one Jewish group believed that divorce was only allowed in a select few situations. That was what we may call the conservative group. But then there was another group that believed that Deuteronomy 24 is essentially giving people permission to divorce whenever they wanted to. And this seemed to be the dominant group that was going on there by the time Jesus hit the scene in the first century AD. And so this group believed that if a wife did anything to displease their husband, then he was allowed to divorce her. And so I'm going to read from a commentary in Matthew that quotes the Mishnah. That's an oral teaching that came just a couple of hundred years before Jesus. And they were written down sort of like a authorized commentary on the Old Testament and teachings that come out of that. And I want to read some of the things that they taught and that were in this second camp. So the Mishnah stated that a man could divorce his wife if she were barren, if she became a deaf mute, or if she had epilepsy, tetanus, warts, or leprosy. A man could divorce his wife if she failed to perform certain services at home, or if her husband considered her lazy. Rabbinic law also stated that certain physical defects in the wife were so offensive that they were legitimate grounds for divorce. Consequently, a man could divorce his wife if she had a head that was wedge-shaped, turnip-shaped or hammer-shaped, or if her head was otherwise malformed. He could divorce his wife if she had poor posture or if she had thinning hair. He could divorce her if she had no eyebrows, only one eyebrow, or bushy eyebrows. The man could divorce his wife if her nose were too big or too little, her ears were too little or too floppy. And there are other characteristics, but I for the sake of time, I started just cutting out things. If she had an overbite, an underbite, missing teeth, a poor figure, or a swollen belly. A man could divorce his wife if she visited the home of her parents if against her husband's wishes, the in-laws moved into the same city to be near their daughter. A man could divorce his wife if she had a bad reputation, if she burned his supper, or if he simply found someone he thought was prettier. Not offering sexual relations frequently enough was also grounds for divorce, and the law specifically expressed appropriate expectations regarding this matter. The wife had to satisfy her husband every day if he had time, twice a week if he were a day laborer, or every 30 days if he were a camel driver, and every 6 months if he were a sailor. And so this is the background to what Jesus is speaking about in Matthew chapter 5. So this is the thinking that is going on when Jesus steps onto the scene and begins to talk about divorce. Do you see how the passage has been misread, misinterpreted, and really gone to really just take advantage of the women? So by this day, the group believed that they could divorce their wives for just about any reason. And so before talking about what Jesus means in our passage in Matthew 5, we need to look at another important passage where Jesus goes more in depth on the teaching on divorce, and that's in Matthew chapter 19. And so let me read parts of this passage here. And notice that at the beginning here, Jesus is going to be asked the same issue. They're going to try to trick him, but they're going to be asking him about the same issue. Can I get divorced for any reason? So this is in Matthew 19, starting in verse 3. And Pharisees came up to him and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause?" They're thinking about the Mishnah and everything that had to do with that. And Jesus answered, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.' So they are no longer two, but one flesh. And what, therefore, God has joined together, let no man separate." So the Pharisees asked Jesus if they can divorce for any reason, if a person can divorce for any reason, which is clearly what the Mishnah was implying there. Jesus essentially answers them by giving them a principle on marriage. And this is an important principle that goes to us as well. And so Jesus' principle on marriage is this, that marriage is a union created by God that is intended to be permanent. So Jesus goes back all the way to Genesis chapter 1 to give this principle. And that way back, way in the beginning, God intended two people, male and female, man and woman, to become one flesh, to come together and become one flesh. Now, let's think about this. Is it possible for one flesh to separate? And the answer is sure, yeah. If you try hard enough, you can separate one flesh. But there's going to be a lot of pain and a lot of scarring to get that one flesh separated. So therefore, if God has brought these two together, he says, don't let man separate them. And so he's telling this to a group of people that believed the Old Testament said you could divorce for just about any reason. And so now the group asks, starting in verse 7, And so they said to him, why then did Moses command, one to give a certificate of divorce to send her away? But then Jesus said to them, because of your hardness of hearts, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives from the beginning. It was not so. Another translation of that is that it was not this way from the beginning. So again, God created marriage, and at that time, divorce was never part of the equation. So the only reason that Moses allowed it was because of the sinfulness of people and to protect the women in Deuteronomy chapter 24. So then he tells them the same thing that he says in Matthew 5, here in Matthew 19. He says, and I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And so let's go back to Matthew chapter 5 and look at that passage more closely. So first of all, he says, whoever divorces his wife. Now, in that time, it was the men who did divorcing. So in our context, it would be very applicable to say whoever divorces his spouse. So this passage is pertaining to both men and to women in our modern day. And then he says, except for this, sexual immorality. And in the original language, sexual immorality was just one word. And that Greek word there is porneia. And that's the word that we get in English. That's where we get pornography. But Jesus isn't just referring to pornography in the way that we see it. The word that he's using can refer to a number of sexual sins and sex outside of marriage. So it can refer to adultery, it can refer to fornication, homosexuality, bestiality, and so on. So all sorts of things. So when someone has sex outside of marriage, they're breaking the marriage bond. And if that happens, then Jesus says that getting a divorce in that particular situation is permissible. Though, I might add, not required. So if the marriage can be saved, then by all means, pursue forgiveness and pursue reconciliation. And so before I go any more into talking about exceptions and all these different teachings, I want to share just a short testimony from a pastor that I watched who taught on this subject a number of years ago. And he was preaching on this passage, and he stopped right where we're at here, and he shared a testimony from his own life. And so it's only about a minute. Let's go ahead and let's watch
this. You know what we rarely ever talk about? The biblical grounds for forgiveness. That we just leave out somehow. I am so glad that after the first 5 years of my own marriage that Sue and I found the biblical grounds for forgiveness. Because 34 years later, I am so delightfully glad that we are still married. But you know, we came that close. I mean, we were that close to getting a divorce. And we never went to church. I didn't want to have anything to do with God. And our marriage suffered. And we did all kinds of horrible things to one another. Let me tell you, grounds for divorce, we had them in our marriage. I know what that's like. But you know what? It was that very thing in our marriage that led us to Jesus. It was the failure of our marriage that brought us to the cross. And there we found Christ. And there we found forgiveness for our own sins, and there we found the strength to forgive one another. And we found grounds for forgiveness. And man, I'm so glad we did.
So pursue reconciliation if it is at all possible. But if a spouse chooses to divorce in that situation, then it would be considered an allowable or what we may call a biblical divorce. Now, on the flip side, if someone divorces for another reason than what Jesus gives, and then remarries, Jesus says that that person is committing adultery. And I'll go more into that in a moment. But for the sake of time, I want to move on to the next part. And that is where I answer a few objections or questions that people may have. Because no doubt, the question that may come up after reading Matthew 5, 31, 32 is this. Are there any other grounds for biblical divorce? And so we've already talked about one, and just to keep it all nice and tidy in our list here, the first one that we already talked about is sexual immorality. Not just adultery, but a number of other types of sexual sins outside of marriage. And so that's number one. Number two is this, desertion by an unbelieving spouse. And I'm not going to go into this real in depth, but in 1 Corinthians 7:15, Paul says, "But if an unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. God has called you to peace." So Paul is saying that an unbelieving partner, that if an unbelieving partner leaves his or her spouse, then the other person is not enslaved. And so in other words, that they're not bound to stay married if the unbelieving person leaves the marriage. So this may raise another question, though. What if the believing partner leaves his or her spouse? And I gave a lot of thought to that this week and was thinking about this situation. And in short, I'm going to give you the ideal and then really the realistic. And the ideal is that that's not possible. That a believing spouse would be under the submission of Jesus Christ and of the church. And hypothetically, if a believing spouse leaves their spouse, then the church would step in with church discipline. And so listen to Matthew 18. And if objections are just rising up in your mind, just hold on. Just hold on. Okay? Matthew 18, and this is on the subject of church discipline. Let me read this. "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he listens to you, then you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. And if he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and as a tax collector." So in this situation, there's a person who is engaged in sinful behavior against you. And so you should then go, Jesus says, go and talk to them. Go and confront them. And if they don't listen, then you gather two other wise people and hopefully wise Christians. Then you go and talk to them again. So this is all in the context of church. So these are, you gather other people from the church and you go and talk to them. And if they still don't listen, then you get the whole church involved. So in our situation or in a similar situation, you'd get the church leaders involved. They represent the whole church. And then the church leaders would go with you and speak with that person. And if that person still doesn't listen, still is unrepentant, then what do? Jesus says, let them be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. So what is Jesus getting at here? What is a Gentile or a tax collector? Well, they're an unbeliever. Jesus is saying that if they are living an unrepentant life, then you are to treat them as an unbeliever. Another verse, similar subject here, in 1 Timothy 5:8. "But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So if the person does not provide for his family, Paul says that he is viewed not just as an unbeliever, but worse than an unbeliever. So here's what I'm getting at. This is the third grounds for what I may call biblical divorce, and that is serious physical or emotional desertion. So when a spouse, even a believing spouse here, is physically or emotionally abusive and will not change their ways, that means they are unrepentant and they are acting worse than an unbeliever. And therefore, if they won't listen to the church, they are to be treated as an unbeliever. Now, by way of application, this means that the Christian spouses are not required to stay in an abusive marriage just because they both are, quote unquote, Christians. So you are free to pursue safety. So no husband, listen, no husband should ever physically or emotionally or mentally or any other L-Y word abuse their wife. And it goes the other way around here. But never is it okay. And husbands, we are called to love our wives as Christ loved the church. How much did he love the church? He died for the church. That's how much we are called to love our wives. Now, this may lead to another question, though. What happens if I divorce for reasons outside of these exceptions? If I'm a believer and I divorce for reasons that may not be considered biblical, then what happens? When I answer that, let me read another passage from 1 Corinthians. This is in 7:10 through 11. To the married, I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. And he's just basically saying he's taking Jesus' teaching here. The wife should not separate from her husband, but if she does, she should remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and the husband should not divorce his wife. So I recognize that in this culture, this is going to sound harsh to many people, but we need to understand that this is coming from the context of the importance of marriage, of the one flesh idea. That Jesus says that if you divorce for any other reason than the exception that he gives and marry someone else, that you are committing adultery. And so therefore, Christians who divorce in an unbiblical manner should stay single and pray for reconciliation with their spouse. Now, I want to pause there. In a moment, I'm going to talk about what happens if you're way past that point and already remarried. But for the last few minutes, I want to ask the question, what else can we learn from this passage? Because maybe you're here today, you're not even married, and you came in and you're like, divorce, great. How's that going to help me? What else can we learn from this? And so first of all, I just want to reemphasize that while there are a very few exceptions, we should see marriage as a permanent union between a man and a woman. So we need to treat it like that. We need to see marriage as not as temporary, but as permanent. So divorcing because someone doesn't make you happy is not a good reason to divorce. And a second, with that point in mind, the unmarried should approach marriage with caution by not rushing into it and by seeking wisdom from others about the person that you're considering marrying. And so, in other words, young women here, don't rush into marriage to the first handsome boy that says he loves you. Young men, don't try to marry the first pretty girl that wants to date you. So use caution. Go carefully. Don't just go by emotions, but think about this and let other people come into your life and share wisdom. This is going to sound very old-fashioned, but young people, get the opinion of your parents. What do they think of the person that you're interested in? As uncool as they seem, they've been around long enough to know some good and some bad people. So get their opinion. In the church, if you're part of youth group, man, reach out to your youth leader. Hopefully you're not in youth group when you're considering getting married, so this would be later on. But reach out to your former youth leader, I'll add, and ask them for their opinion. Get together with your youth leader. And so just don't rush into it, because you're setting yourself up for trouble if you go into this not thinking clearly about things. And this is, by the way, one of the practical reasons, not the only reason, but one of the practical reasons why we should wait to have sex until we're married. Because, bluntly speaking here, once the clothes come off, you're not thinking critically. Once you're sexually connected, it's harder to process all the other things that you should be thinking through. And so approach marriage carefully. And then last, if you fall into the group that has divorced and remarried on unbiblical grounds, remember that there is grace and forgiveness. And so I want to say, because I have no doubt there's people here today that are in this situation, that you haven't committed the unforgivable sin in getting divorced and remarried. And so in John 8, I'm going to close with this story here. In John 8, some people bring out a woman who is caught in the act of adultery. And they're doing this to trap Jesus. And they bring her out. There's all sorts of people around. And they ask them what they should do, because they saying the law says that they should stone her. And so Jesus outsmarts them by saying this: "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And so the people get the point, and they start walking away, and after a moment, it's just Jesus and the adulterous woman. And so this is what happens. Jesus then stands up and says to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" And she says, "No one, Lord." And Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." So two things I want to point out here. First of all, from this passage, it reminds us that none of us are good enough to cast stones at anyone else. One person isn't better than the other person simply because, you know, you've never gotten a divorce and the other person has. We are all sinners. And yet, if you have turned to Jesus Christ and you've made him the Lord of your life, then your sins are forgiven. Not just the small sins, not just the other sins, but whether that be hatred or lust or stealing or murder, and yes, even divorce. And so your divorce is not greater than Jesus's forgiveness. And so maybe you have messed up big time. Maybe you were the one that committed adultery and your spouse left you and you've gotten remarried. But I want to say that you are forgiven through the sacrificial work of Jesus on the cross. And that's the beauty of the gospel right there. That he takes the sinners like us, all messed up in various ways. Some divorced, some not divorced, some adulterous, some not adulterous, some murderous, some not murderous. All of us are saved and made clean and forgiven through the blood of Jesus Christ. And then Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go. And from now on, sin no more." And I was thinking about that in the context of people who have remarried in what we may call a non-biblical marriage. And how do you do that if you're already remarried? The reality is that you have sinned and you can't undo that sin. But from this point forward, I want to challenge you, go and sin no more. So I want to encourage you, love your current spouse like Christ loves the church. You treat your new marriage as something permanent that will never change. And you love your spouse for better or for worse, till death do you part. So again, recognize that this is a tough message for some. Controversial in the sense that lots of opinions. But I just want us to close with the idea that, listen, Jesus' grace and forgiveness is greater than any sin that we can think of. And so let's go out of here remembering that whether you are divorce-free or divorced, you are loved by God, and that you are forgiven if you've made him the Savior of your life. Let's go ahead and pray. Worship team, you can come on up.